This is Speaking Freely. I'm Annette Newell. It's an American story, an Oregon story.
My mother came to this country in the trunk of a car.
Parts of it really hard to hear.
She brought us to Oregon. She was fleeing domestic violence. The time before that, she had my 8 siblings in the backseat of strangers' cars when she came to the country. Both times, she did this to ensure that we had a better opportunity, that we would be healthy, and that we would be safe. She did this to ensure that our family would remain together.
Eddie Morales is now in his second term as a Gresham City Councilor. He was first elected in 2018. Here, he describes how he got involved in politics.
Once we were in Oregon, I became the first in my family to graduate high school and to go to college. And in college, I learned how to organize by joining farm workers in a boycott to demand better wages, and we won. And I knew that workers in this country could have power. When I was in college, my mother had to flee back to Mexico to be with my ailing grandmother, but she wasn't able to return back to the United States and ultimately passed away there. I learned that our country desperately needed immigration reform. Since that time, I've lost 2 brothers to gun violence and a sister to addiction. I learned that we desperately need to address public policy around safety and addiction. These are the reasons why I've dedicated the last 24 years of my life working with people to make concrete improvements in their lives. I've worked in Oregon and across the country on the Affordable Care Act, comprehensive immigration reform, and supporting organizers across the country in their fights. Every single time I went and organized with these communities to make change. I started to organize here in Gresham after my mother passed away. And that led me to run for city council. And in the city council, I've been able to work on the issues that are tearing working families like mine apart. I'm dedicated to keeping families together, safe, and healthy, just the way that my mom did, by digging in and finding solutions to affordable housing, addiction services, public safety, creating good-paying jobs with health insurance, affordable and accessible health care, mitigating how climate change affects us all, and guaranteeing and expanding reproductive freedoms and abortion.
In November, Morales filed with the Federal Elections Commission to run in the Democratic primary in Oregon's 3rd Congressional District. It will be open for the first time since 1996, when current Congressman Earl Blumenauer won a special election to replace former U.S. Representative Ron Wyden, who moved up to the Senate. Now 75, Blumenauer says he will not seek a 15th term. Morales is joining a crowded field trying to replace him.
My community is ready for me to run for federal office so that we can take the work that we've been doing here in Gresham and make that available to others. Because what's worked here in Gresham will work for Oregon, and what has worked will work for Oregon will work for this country. In 2004, when I first moved to Washington, D.C., right after school, I got to serve on the board of Choice USA with Gloria Steinem, and we taught the history of abortions and reproductive health care to students across the country and advocated for better reproductive health care. I've also been working with Planned Parenthood to ensure that people on the eastern part of this district and in East County have access to reproductive health care and help to open 2 clinics, one in Ontario and one here in East Portland, and also worked with a coalition of organizations, reproductive justice organizations, to defeat Measure 106, which would have rolled back reproductive rights in our community. I also serve on the board of a group called Community Catalyst. It's a national organization whose mission is that we won't stop until everyone has what they need to be healthy and our health systems are shaped by and accountable to all people. We have been funding and supporting Medicaid expansion fights. I want to share this story because I think it's one that many times gets lost and is very important for anyone who approaches healthcare through an equity, racial justice lens. Growing up, my health insurance was going to the emergency room. We didn't have preventative care. And I do think in Oregon, we've made progress through the Oregon Health Plan and now allowing immigrants to also access healthcare. But people of color have less access to healthcare and live with higher risks. Many times they have harder jobs. that are physical and unsafe jobs. They live in places where they don't have access to clean air, clean water, or healthy foods. They don't have access to the outdoors and public safe spaces, and don't have quality jobs that provide the benefit.
Tragedy within his family led to a commitment to public service.
When we talk about healthcare, we have to address it through the intersection of how all of these social determinants of health impact one's healthy and well-being. In my own family, my sister passed away from opioid addictions. She was a factory worker, a line worker here in Oregon, and her shoulder blew out. She was prescribed opioid medication for the pain. She became addicted, and we lost her. Had we had a more comprehensive health care system and network, I think she would still be here. She would have received the services to handle the addiction, and we maybe wouldn't have been as quick to prescribe opioids as her solution. I also believe my mother would still be alive these days if she had access to high-quality health care. See, my mother was asthmatic, and at one point, because she was living in Mexico, was housebound because she couldn't be around the bad quality air around her. That deteriorated her health. When I came out as a young person, and so did my trans niece, our community was really poorly informed about HIV and AIDS, and only stigma made its way in our communities. As members of the LGBT community, we have feared for our lives, not only from hate crimes, but from medical issues like HIV, that at times seemed like a death sentence. If we were to contract the virus, we also felt political leaders did not care enough. Unfortunately, my trans niece contracted HIV and has been living with it. Thankfully, HIV healthcare has significantly improved, but people living with HIV may not be living if they did not have access to community-based health centers, medicine, tests, and ongoing care. My own inadequate dental health care and preventative care growing up led me to spend tens of thousands of dollars to correct related dental issues that could have eventually created bigger health issues for me later. I've learned about struggles with healthcare from my community, my family, and my experience, but also from the provider standpoint, because I have a really unique perspective these days. My in-laws are a retired surgical nurse and a retired orthopedic surgeon, and they shared with me the real life stories and choices that people who come under their care have to take, including my brother who was shot. And unbeknownst to us at the time, my mother-in-law was part of his trauma team. My father-in-law in his private practice lowered costs and sometimes provided free services to patients in need and did house calls to many. My in-laws, like many other healthcare professionals, didn't go into this field for the money, the recognition, but because they are committed to the health of their communities. I saw the effects of successful and unsuccessful cases with their patients and how emotionally connected they were to their work. While remaining consummate professionals, I've had to console my mother-in-law when she comes home from work after losing a precious infant patient due to heart defects. I'm committed to restoring and improving the ACA, Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, and to work towards a single-payer healthcare system that will protect workers who have already negotiated premium coverage and raise the quality of care for everyone else to match while reducing the overall cost.
When Morales was asked if everyone has healthcare, won't the overall costs go up? Here's how he responded.
There are obviously several proposals that are introduced and floating around. And I do believe that there is a scenario where there are enough people paying into a system that we can increase the quality of care for people and lower the cost. I think it is going to probably a transition over time will involve and require an investment from the federal government and upfront. But I think ultimately we will get a better system, more coverage, and more affordable, high-quality care by moving towards a single-payer system. You have a group of people who are supporters of a more streamlined, simple, high-quality, affordable healthcare system that maybe is a single-payer, right, that creates it. And I know in the initial ACA, there was a significant amount of resources that were committed to outreach to communities to get them enrolled in healthcare. I know that the Trump administration really cut that back. I think part of the work that we have to do is continue to support those types of efforts that reach out into particularly communities that are hard to reach, and help people facilitate and navigate through this complex system. In the short term, I think initially a move to a more streamlined single payer system helps to alleviate that. If you have companies, individuals, Medicare, Medicaid all paying into sort of one streamlined process, I think it creates simplicity for the consumer or the end user, which I think should be part of our goals and our policies.
As an Oregonian, in his view, what he thinks Oregon's single biggest problem is when it comes to healthcare?
I still think we struggle with reaching hard-to-reach communities and making sure that folks are covered and are able to access preventative care as well. For a lot of our communities, the emergency room has been our health insurance, our health coverage. And obviously, that is so expensive for our communities because it spirals us into missing days of school, missing work, and has all these other effects. I think the other big piece for us is that we haven't done enough to realize that health also involves all of these other determinants, right? Clean air and water, having stable and safe housing, access to the outdoors, safe and efficient public and active transit. It's the work that we need to do around that is important. The other piece around this is addiction and mental health work. I serve on the board of the University of Oregon Alumni Association and really proud of the new school and the new campus that is here in district to really prepare much more mental health professionals for the field. Another big issue here is the pay. We have to pay people to do this work. And there have been moves to and underinvestments in getting people into particularly like nursing, into these schools, into these programs, nursing programs, to prepare them for these careers. And some of this work has been outsourced, right? Particularly we saw that during the pandemic as people became traveling nurses. They were able to make more money living and making those trade-offs of maybe not having employee-sponsored healthcare because they were making more. And so I think we need to make sure that people are getting paid for the work that we're expecting them to do.
Another person wrote in with a question about access to mental health services in Oregon being among the worst in the country. What can be done about that?
Continuing to make sure that it is covered in our healthcare premiums and try to reduce the amount of resources that we have to pay before it becomes part of our premiums. Not recently, because I've been too busy, but I normally see a therapist and it's expensive. And a lot of times it's not until you hit your threshold, sometimes in the $1,000, $2,000, that gets covered by your insurance. And so I think we need to take a hard look at how that is covered in our healthcare system. A lot of people won't do it because a $200, $250 session is really not within people's reach. I think we need a larger supply of people in this profession. And I'm really proud that we were able to launch this new school to get more people ready for these professions as well.
Next, he answered a question about access to guns, which is of special concern because he's lost his own family members to gun violence.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, I shared my personal story. I've lost two brothers to gun violence. Both times, it was someone who would not have qualified to have the guns by in the current status that we have. I think that there's still work to be done right here. And for a while, I was part of the Oregon's Common Sense Gun Law Coalition requiring background checks and enough time for those background checks to clear. I think putting a longer wait time from the minute you are background checked and qualify for a gun to when you get it, no one should feel like they can walk in and need to get the gun in that moment that they're making the purchase. So I believe in longer wait times. So there's still work to be done here. And again, it's that those are all social determinants of health, right? You can be healthy and live in a place where you're not safe. And both of my brothers were young. They were in their teens and 20s. People would have thought of them and seen them as healthy individuals, but their health and their lives were actually compromised by gun violence.
What are the steps that Morales thinks Congress can take to help create a universal health care?
We have a system, Medicare, right? And we saw some investments and growth in that. I know that there are debates to lower the age. Right now, there's a gap. The people who are making just a little too much to be covered by Medicaid, but maybe not hitting the age requirement of 65 to be covered by Medicare, right? So there's a gap of people that are not being served. I think we need to focus in on where those gaps are. I think we need to restore the ACA to where it was initially intended and make the improvements there. I think that many times in Congress, the debate gets into where our North Star is, and we start there, and sometimes lose sight of the small, I wouldn't even say small, but of the gaps. And a lot of the pieces within the ACA have been very popular. And so I think that there's a structure to build from and to continue to build the public will and the will in Congress to start making moves to a more single-payer healthcare system. Right now, about half of the people who are covered are either covered through Medicare or Medicaid. The other 47-48% are covered through an employer. And then there's a percentage that are covered on their own, some through veteran services. There's still gaps again. And the way that our current policies are set up, there are limits, either age or how you get your health care and what your employer or your service provider is able to negotiate on your behalf. Then there are people who don't qualify for any of that. By having a single payer system, you're collecting the funds for that through a tax system that everyone's paying into that will, I think, eventually be cheaper than people paying monthly premiums. So you get rid of the monthly premiums, you are paying in through your taxes, and you're able to cover everyone. So just for that coverage nature alone, I think you get a better system because you have more people paying into it, you get, I think, a better system as well. And you can set equitable ways for people to pay into that system. Right now, it's not based on people's income. And so what if some people paid a little more? I think that's our North Star, is to ensure everyone is covered. I think in this moment, we have to look at who's not being covered or who has less than great quality healthcare and start there. I've always believed that if we create policies targeted at the people who are the most disproportionately impacted by an issue, it raises all boats. And I think that a lot of those individuals are living in the gaps that I talked about earlier today. And so we should be expanding our Medicaid coverage. We should be working to lower our Medicare coverage age.
But Morales was asked, do insurance companies have a future in gaining access to health care in the United States? Here's how he responded.
The proposals that I see, you will still have health care companies. You're just negotiating instead of on your own or by yourself through government in a single payer system. And I think when you're able to do that, you're able to negotiate much better rates. You're able to negotiate better quality. In some ways, you're helping to eliminate some of the competition that has led us to an increase, many times much more than inflation, and made this so inaccessible to people, right? When we passed the ACA, and I worked on that, I was living in D.C. at the time, with over 20 million people who came onto our health insurance. And slowly we've chipped away at that. Even now we have more people covered than we did. And I think the insurance companies are doing just fine. Our premiums just went up, right? But if you're able to then streamline that and everyone is able to see the options and have access to these options, I think you start chipping away at the competitive nature that drives cost up. And I would say sometimes quality down. I live in Multnomah County. We're the second most expensive county in the country, is something that I read recently, next to New York. We are being taxed and additionally on property taxes here. And I know a lot of people, particularly in my community, that are having a hard time keeping the homes that they've already paid the principal off of because of the taxes increases. So I don't take the taxing lightly, but I believe having people pay into this through the tax system who are already paying it will probably be paying less than their premiums now. Also, you're asking companies and higher earners to pay more into it, which I don't believe they're paying enough. And so I don't think that this will be more expensive than the current rates that people are paying. I think it'll require an upfront investment, but I do think in some of the studies I've seen show that eventually, what this is like a $4 trillion industry. The other thing is there's so many administrative costs right now, right? Moving more towards a single payer system also reduces those administrative costs.
And he was asked, what else should Medicare cover other than its current benefits?
I believe dental, right? Probably needs to also be included. And I know that there, it covers prescriptions, but I think we have work to do in terms of keeping prescriptions affordable, allowing for people to access drugs, pharmaceuticals from Canada and other countries that produce medication at lower costs. I think it is a move that we can make to bring those costs down. I also believe having Medicare be able to negotiate pharmacy rates, I think will eventually bring the rates down too, because it creates a competition. So I think those things could happen pretty quickly.
How can we stop all the bankruptcies among rural hospitals?
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I know that in some places, and like I mentioned earlier, with our work at Planned Parenthood here, we opened up a clinic to actually provide services that are more accessible, because there are a lot of people who don't have, who are in more rural parts of our state that don't have access to healthcare or clinics. Mm-hmm. And I think looking at community health centers, I think in my example, Planned Parenthood, but others, and figuring out how we can invest those more so to reach these communities. I don't know that they all need a large system. I wanted to share one example, though, of something recently, because here in Russia, we have the Legacy Birthing Center, and it was at risk of closing, which would have meant that anybody going into labor would have had to travel into Portland or Sunnyside. To me, that was an access and equity issue, right? At the same time, when we already know that our ambulances are stretched thin, so is our fire department, so it just would back up an entire system. We organized here in Gresham and were able to keep that center by talking and demonstrating the need for more equitable and accessible access to clinics. So I think we need to ensure that resources are made available to community-based health centers, and that as part of our DEI or equity work, that we're also addressing head-on investments in rural communities. Here's another thing I'll say, is that I think we need more transparency in our healthcare system. Lots of money goes into the system, and where does it go? And where is it covered? So I think what I'll be able to do is, in Congress, bring together the stakeholders and take leadership from community on what are the best paths forward in our district. In terms of workers that are providing services at home, I am a very pro-labor supporter, and I know that there are efforts in Congress to allow people who are providing independent work to be able to join a union, and then even if they're on their own, join collectively with other professionals to demand better wages, to demand better safety conditions and benefits for them. I would love to see the PRO Act actually pass through, allowing for people who are independent workers to be able to still join a system that provides that. Again.
And Gresham City Council member Eddie Morales was also asked what he could do in Congress to achieve bipartisan policies.
Currently on my city council, we are a very diverse group of elected officials. We have the range from more conservative Republicans to very progressive Democrats. And when we focus on the problem that we're trying to solve and really engage with our community, when we have to face our community, and we do that, and we bring people who are directly impacted by the issues that we're trying to solve to the table, mm-hmm. and the people working directly with them, we actually agree many times on the actual solutions that we could get done. I think that, and I know that the country is divided more so than it's ever been. I think a poll after poll, data after data shows this is the most divided our country has been. I think we have to start getting back to the real specifics of problems that need to be solved, engaging communities that are impacted by those problems, and experts and stakeholders, and start to get to solution. And I think in this area, those are those gaps that we talked about, particularly this year here in Oregon. We have one of the largest kickers, right? I think we probably should look into the kicker and see whether those types of investments, when we do better than expected here in Oregon, gets reinvested into these areas. Our healthcare budget federally is like less than 10% or around 10%. This is about keeping people healthy, keeping healthy people continue to go to school, continue to work. So we have to address this in a really intersectional way. Housing to me is one of the key pillars of not just someone's health, someone's economic security too. And people can keep stable jobs, can keep up with their education, an uninterrupted education, can maintain a network around them, whether it's healthcare providers, counseling, if they have stability in their housing. Growing up, I think we moved 13 times by the time I was in high school. And so every year, every 2 years, we had to pick up and leave and move. And the traumatic nature of displacing somebody from a community over and over, the toll that has on people, it takes us a long time to undo that. But when we were able to get the Oregon Health Plan growing up, many times those moves were across state lines because it was cheaper to live at one point in one place, or somebody had an extra room where they would take my mother and I in. It was unsettling. It kept us in poverty, and it kept us from being a healthier family because we couldn't keep a stable job because the job that we had in one place wasn't enough to pay the food and the rent. It kept interrupting my education and my learning. I think a lot of times people miss that mark, that housing, climate, gun violence, safety, those all impact someone's health. And so please keep following our campaign. Sign up to get our updates. We put out really great policy through them, as well as more stories about stuff that's happening in our community. And it's www.eddymorales.com, EDYMORALES.com.
That was Gresham City Council member Eddie Morales taking part in the series called Conversations with Candidates 2024, put on virtually by the Portland City Club and Oregon Physicians for a National Health Program. He is running in the May Democratic primary for Oregon's 3rd Congressional District. The race is open because current Congressman Earl Blumenauer has decided to not seek a 15th term.
You're listening to Speaking Freely with Annette Newell. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you have an idea for a topic you would like to hear about on the show, please send me an email about it, annette.newell@alphamediausa.com. Glad you chose to join us here on your favorite Alpha Media radio station, and be sure to check out our Speaking Freely podcast on KXL.com. Have a great week.